It's another double game week, and hopefully this time it'll be a little more successful. Are you swooping for seagulls or magpies? Who should you move in for March? And don't sleep on single game weekers, especially at Liverpool. Hello, welcome along to the FPL pod. I'm not sure about you, but it's Thursday when we're recording this, and I've just about got over double game week 35, the game week that promised so much, but let's be honest, it delivered so very little. I'll go first. Hands up. I got 36 points. Sam Bonfield, what did you get?
41.
Show off.
It was red all week, all weekend. I was like, oh no, this is a disaster. And then
Alexis, I know what you're going to say.
McAllister.
Oh, he's back, just, you mean?
He popped up with that consolation goal that turned my arrow from a quite significant red to a really reasonable green. I think I went up 10K in overall rank. So yeah, thank you, Alexis McAllister. I am forever in your debt.
I did think of you when he scored that goal, and I thought, that's Sam beating me once again. Jules, come on, what was your score?
35, similar week to you, Kelly, where nothing really worked, including Jason Steele, who got a minus two. I mean, come on.
Minus two.
I was fuming watching that game.
Yes, I know a lot of people felt your pain in that one. And with Brighton in general, no one saw that scoreline against Everton coming, I don't think. But let's park that and crack on with our Game Week 36 preview. And to do that, we need the help of our guest. He's presenter of another hugely successful FPL pod, Fantasy 606 from the BBC. He's also one of their main commentators. And he is someone I regularly see in press boxes. And before the pleasantries of, hi, how are you? It's, hi, how's your FPL team doing? What have you done today? However, Alistair Bruce-Ball, welcome along to the podcast. I don't think we can be friends this week, can we?
No. I get the strategy from you, Kelly. So we run a couple of head-to-head leagues on our Fantasy 606 podcast, and you, very kindly, along with Jules as well, have been a member of those head-to-head leagues for the last couple of seasons. You're actually our defending champion in Division 1. Jules is in relegation trouble in Division 1 this season.
I'll be fine.
You will be fine. He's a great entertainer, is Jules. But what I've now spotted, Kelly, is you get me on the pod here the week that you and I play each other. So you basically get to grill me. I know. So Kelly gets to grill me about what I'm going to do with my team, what transfers I'm going to make, who I'm going to captain.
Insider information.
And then you can beat me. It's out of order.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't actually notice. It was actually when I checked this week and I was looking and I was like, I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing. So I'm going to play my cards very close to my chest. Ali, tell us just how long you've been into FPL, because I know from speaking to you regularly, you are just as obsessed as the rest of us.
Yeah, no, definitely. Regular listener to this podcast always. I've been playing, funny enough, I looked it up before coming on, Kelly. So this is my 17th season.
Whoa.
as an FPL manager,
impressive.
which is a long time, isn't it? But it's only in the last 3 or 4 seasons that I've actually started to properly understand the game because of doing the podcast, because of becoming aware of all the content and listening to the other pods. And weirdly, do you know, and this is a crazy thing to say considering I'm on this podcast and I host another fantasy football podcast, is there's so much guidance and help and advice and stats now. That when I was playing it 17 years ago, I didn't do any long-term planning. I was just making punts left, right, and centre. And actually, I think at times I actually missed that sort of naive innocence of playing FPL, which I don't have anymore.
I quite like that Jules was like you and didn't really used to plan, but you've still got that naive innocence, haven't you, Jules? Because you still come out with those rogue punts and you still go for them. And I wish I could be more Jules at times.
Exactly. Curtis Jones, I love you. Again.
Oh, here we go again.
Even more this week, my friend.
I was in the car on the way to whatever game last week, Kelly, and I was listening to the pod. It was 2 weeks ago, Curtis Jones, and you said you were going to go Curtis Jones. I was like, that is absolutely ridiculous. That just shows why Jules is in relegation trouble in our head-to-head leagues. And then it comes off, it's just, and I was punching the air for you.
Thank you.
I was raging.
I know you were. I knew you were not. Anyway, you two just know how you are.
Ali, just very quickly, just a word on your podcast. I've been on your pod before, and as you mentioned, myself and Jules in your leagues. The format of the podcast is yourself, Statman Dave, and Chris Sutton.
Yep.
I bumped into Chris Sutton while I was working with Chris Sutton a few weeks ago, and I kind of spoke to him about FPL, and he tried to deflect it away and play it cool and say that his son is kind of assistant manager.
Yep.
Who's the best out of the three of you at it?
We're having an incredibly tight title race this season. Chris has improved massively, and Dave and I take great joy in that. So if I was to sort of liken our pod to this pod, Kelly, you're the presenter, that's my role. And I think you're a bit like me in the way you play the game. So you take in all the advice. You're quite a safe, steady player. You don't take too many risks. Statman Dave is our expert, so I'm going to give his role to Sam. So we basically put Dave on the spot. We absolutely hammer him if he offers advice that goes wrong. We probably don't give him enough credit when he picks the players, you know, that get our listeners loads of points. And then your wild card is Chris Sutton. And these are guys who I would pay to watch their FPL teams play. So I wouldn't pay to watch my own team play. But they go rogue. And Chris is fabulous fun with the game, Kelly, because he doesn't know how to work the app. His son, Ollie, so we call them Clough and Taylor on our pod. So Chris is Clough. Chris is kind of the maverick genius, you know, rude to everyone, but has some brilliant ideas. But Taylor is kind of the brains behind the operation. That is his son, Ollie. And they are having a great season this season. And they make maverick picks, a lot of which don't come off. But they do go differential. So, for example, in game week 35 just gone, Chris went with the Salah captaincy. Dave and I went with the Haaland captaincy. And Chris benefited from that. He's also a McAllister owner, where Dave and I have gone March, and he's benefited from that in the last couple of weeks. So we take great pride in his progress, basically.
I like to call those type of managers jammy. That's what I like to call them. Okay, so it is another double then in 36. And we're hoping this one goes a little bit better. That's the beauty of FPL, right? There's always another game week to get over whatever happened in the last week. Now, this week, it's Brighton and Newcastle that play twice. And of course, in true FPL fashion, at the minute, they both lost last week, making the picks even harder. Or if you're me and wildcarded recently to set yourself up for this, watching Solly March go off just felt like it summed up my whole season altogether. But there is still plenty of value in both of those teams. So let's dive into them in a little bit more detail. Firstly, Newcastle. They've got Leeds away and Brighton at home. Sam, is it as simple as saying we need to treble up on Eddie Howe's side?
Yeah, I think so. It is tough, the treble up, because going into game week 35, I think a lot of people were debating whether you go with Isak and Wilson together up front. And we had that conversation on this pod last week about how if you could make that work in the forward line, then you would. But then you've got Haaland, who you just, even with a blank last time around, and goodness only knows how Haaland blanked last time around, but even with that, you can't take him out of your team. And then there's Kane, who is just continuing to do really well. So it's very hard to take him out of your team as well. So getting the double up there is difficult. And it feels like you'd be punting on a midfielder from Newcastle. There's plenty of options in there. You've got the likes of Joe Linton and Willock. You know, you've got Jacob Murphy as well in there, St. Maximin coming back from injury. So you've got options, but they do feel like punts. But maybe actually that's what you want going into a double game week where Leeds are there. Maybe you want a differential midfielder from Newcastle who can replace Solly March if you've got an injury problem there, or who can come in and bring you some real differential points that help you gain mini league rank or help you, you know, climb in the overall rankings.
Okay, let's start with defenders. We're also going to include goalkeeper, so Nick Pope in this as well. Firstly, Kieran Trippier, no returns in his last seven. What do we do with him, Jules? Because he is so highly owned in the game. Do we have to keep him because they've got a double?
I think so. I know it's difficult because they're not defending great at the moment. I mean, they certainly conceded chances and goals, but he's still on set pieces. I know we say all the time, but it's important, even that hasn't been working in the last few weeks either. But there's always, this is a team that is good, should be good on set pieces. So it's still very important. But it's tough because, I mean, the Leeds game, you could see them, I think, keeping a clean sheet. After that, the Brighton game, then they will play Leicester and Chelsea to finish off the season. So I still think there's enough there for Trippier to get us some points between now and the end of the season. But I'm not sure if I would double up in defenders. So get, if you have Trippier, go and get Shaw or Botman or Byrne or whoever you want. Because of the risk that if they concede, then both of them obviously, you know, concede the goals and don't get the clean sheet.
Yeah, the top three most owned Newcastle players are Trippier, Pope and Cher. As Jules has said then, Ali, in recent weeks, maybe our perspective on Newcastle's defensive assets have changed a little bit. But if someone does want to go for a second Newcastle defender, who's the best one alongside Trippier, I'm presuming?
Yeah, so I've got Trippier and Cher. So I'm already committed here, Kelly, in terms of, ooh, I'm not going to change my Newcastle assets around because I've already got three lined up. Now, I made a bit of an error last week, although it's fine for this week, in that I took a -4 last week to bring Isak in was Jota having already taken Jack Grealish out to bring Riyad Mahrez in. So it cost me -4. I was delighted with the Mahrez move, though. I thought Grealish wasn't going to play. There was a lot of talk about that. Mahrez came in and got a couple of assists. I went way too early. I just thought, for some reason, I got it in my head that Jota wasn't going to play. So Isak's already in there.
Okay.
So I'm not going to make any changes. I think if you had two Newcastle assets and you had room for one more, if you're looking defender, go Share. Definitely go Share. I went with him on my wild card a wee way back, mainly because of scoring potential. He came up with a couple of lovely assists in game week 32 in the big win against Tottenham. Sorry about that, Sam, to mention him again. So I'm very happy with him. I think he's a little bit more of an injury risk at times than the others. But actually, do you know, if I had a Trippier, say, and one of Isak or Wilson, I think I'd do what Sam was just talking about, and I would take a punt on a Newcastle midfielder, I think, rather than go with a double up in defence, because Jules is right. I think the Leeds game is tough. I really do. I think that's a really difficult game for them. You know, Leeds, I know they lost against Manchester City, but Sam Allardyce is there. They are desperate now, and Leeds at home is tough. And then they've got to face Brighton. So I think I would go for one of the midfielders. I'd probably go Willock. I like Jacob Murphy because of, I think he's probably got kind of a little bit more explosiveness about him in terms of scoring points, but Willock just gets more minutes. And I'm a steady Eddie, boring FBL manager. Give me minutes every day of the week.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I'm one of those managers that currently owns Isak and Trippier, and I'm wondering where to put that final Newcastle player, because I do want to triple up. Jules, are you going to make the case for Joel Linton again?
Yeah, I think so. but Ali's right on Willock, and Willock was really unlucky not to score against Arsenal. I mean, this is typically in a game where you almost deserve a bonus point for your play being so good, but yet not returning because, you know, he hit the post and he had chances and he did so well in that game. But I think, yeah, Joel Linton is also on really good form, even if the Arsenal match, I think for the whole Newcastle team, didn't really go according to plans. But I think Joel Linton, certainly at that price too, I mean, you could go Willock or Joel Linton, I think he's probably pretty much the same. But yeah, I expect them to have quite a big, I expect them to start both, to be fair, with Bruno, and then to have a big impact in this double game week.
Yeah, Joel Linton, 6 million, and Willock is 4.7 million. So both pretty budget friendly. And I was reading a little bit about Joel Linton in preparation for my potential transfers, not giving anything away to Ali. 4 of Joel Linton's 6 goals this season and his 2 assists have come in his last 7. He's only second to Wilson for stats, and he's 15 shots and 11 in the box in the last 4 matches, are amongst the top 4 in that Newcastle side. So he's certainly showing form. Sam, who's your pick of the midfielders at Newcastle?
So I think I sat on this pod last week and said I was going to be scouting Newcastle midfield in their game against Arsenal. And I didn't feel like I learnt that much about Willock and Joe Linton in that game. Because
you should
Arsenal,
have scouting against Tottenham.
Well, yeah, I should have, shouldn't I? But I wanted to look at them now against teams that they're, you know, in the form that they're in at the moment, rather than in the form against a terrible Spurs side who got it all wrong. but looking at the two of them in that game, I thought that Willock was maybe more impressive in terms of his attacking potential than Joe Linton was. But Joe Linton has that security of starts that I don't think you can be certain of with the likes of Willock or Murphy. Put Murphy in that category too if you want to go with him. I do like the price tag that Willock has though, because going beyond game week 36 and into the final 2 game weeks of the season, as somebody who still doesn't have Salah, I am looking for a way to fund him and to bring him into my team that doesn't involve selling Haaland, selling Trent or selling Kane. And so going in with somebody like Joe Willock is going to save me that additional 1.3 million, which comes in very handy for trying to get Salah in for the final 2 game weeks of the season. So for what it does to my team, I like Joe Willock. For his returns that he had, or potential for returns that he had rather, against Arsenal, I think he impressed me slightly more. But Joe Linton's security of starts, I think, edges it that way. So it is quite tight between the two of them. At the moment, I'm edging Willock's way.
Not that I'm going to try and sway you any which way, Kelly, obviously, considering our head-to-head this week. But am I right in saying, I think I'm right in saying, that Joel Linton loves a yellow card?
Yeah, that is true.
I think he's one of the most booked players, isn't he, in the Premier League. Now, I know that's only a minus one and you're comparing that against potential attacking returns and the stats you had for Joel Linton. Actually, I wasn't even aware of that. What's that man Dave doing on Ofcom? Why are you not telling me that? But that's another thing I would just bear in mind. But anyway, I'm not going Newcastle midfield. I'm committed to Trippier, Cher, Isak.
One more thing on Willock. I think, you know, if you look at him in comparison, directly comparing the two of them over the last four matches, he's had 12 shots in those last four. That's a team leading total across the Newcastle team. He's had 7 shots from inside the box. That's more than any other Newcastle midfielder. So in terms of his attacking potential, he has been the more forward of the two of them in recent weeks. And then when we look at him for chances created, although Joe Linton's underlying stats are also really good, Willock's also come out really nicely as well. He's had 9 key passes in that period, which is second in the Newcastle team alongside Bruno Guimaraes. So I think that Willock, for the price difference, I think he just edges it for me in terms of his stats.
Ali, I just Googled Joel Linton yellow cards and there was an article written on the 18th of April that's called Newcastle's Joel Linton has received the most bookings in the Premier League. Why? And as of the 18th of April, he had received 11. So you weren't wrong. So that is definitely something to consider, okay, particularly in a head-to-head when every point could, of course, make a difference. Yeah. So I won't be taking Jules' advice and getting Joel Linton in, that's for sure. So, okay, we've discussed defenders and midfielders, but the debate that I'm seeing most amongst FPL managers at the moment is people have either gone for Wilson, people have either gone for Isak. Do we now do the double up? I'm not 100% set on getting that midfielder as my third slot because Callum Wilson is staring at me. I really, really wish I'd gone for Callum Wilson over Isak a few weeks ago, but I didn't. Sam, which way, if managers don't have either, do they need to have one? If they have one, should they have the other? What is... I'm stumbling over my question because I almost don't know what the question is, but I definitely don't know what the answer is.
It is actually really tough, the Wilson-Isak thing at the moment. I am firmly, and I'm not normally this committed, but I'm firmly in the Wilson camp. I think...
Thanks.
All of the stuff that I have read, well, I don't have either.
So
at the moment.
That's the problem. I'm in the Wilson camp, yet I own Isak.
Yeah, well, I think it's difficult. And I presume your other two forwards are, who have you got in your other forward line? Haaland and who?
Jota. So see, I can very easily
so you
and happily
could
get
do
rid
it.
Of Jota. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're in a place where you could do it. I really like Wilson. I think, you know, he's been Newcastle's top performer in fantasy recently. He's scored 5 goals. He's got 32 points in his last 4 matches. In that period, Isak has scored twice, he's got an assist and he's got 23 points. So 9 points less, which is not insignificant at this point of the season. You know, that is a reasonable amount in terms of your position in mini leagues, in terms of your overall ranking. Of course, if you go with the both of them, then you get the benefit of both of those things. What I am hearing a lot and what I am seeing a lot when I am looking at, you know, the conversations that are being had on social media about the two of them in the debate is, oh, but Isak's more secure of minutes. And that is true to some extent. Isak has averaged 7 minutes per appearance more than Wilson in recent weeks. It's just 7 minutes. It's not a significant chunk of time that Wilson has had less than Isak.
Surely it's about who uses their minutes better as well.
Correct. And this is the point I'm trying to make, I think, is that we are seeing superior goal scoring opportunities for Wilson. Isak tends to go out wider when they're on the pitch together. Wilson is less likely to start, but I think that's potentially because of his injury record and the fact that they are trying to kind of ease him back in a little bit more gently. He's only been named in the starting 11 3 times in the last 10 matches. But whilst Isak is secure of the starts, he's also had his minutes managed and he's been coming off earlier in the games when Wilson's been coming on. So Wilson's playing against those tired defences, whereas Isak's starting from the beginning of the game. So for me, I think when you look at the underlying stats and when you look at the minutes and what the minutes actually mean, Wilson is the better pick if you can only go for one of them. Of course, Wilson also got penalties too.
What do you do then if your name's Kelly and you've got Isak and you're
you
thinking
sell Jota.
Of bringing Wilson? So do you think the double up, is the double up still a good option?
I think it is.
It's
I mean,
risky.
The one that it is
that's
risky.
I'm not a risky manager. Yeah. Ali's completely right in the way he analysed my FPL history. I'm not a risky manager.
And the other thing to say here is, having flippantly said you sell Jota, if Jota's available, he's got a great fixture against Leicester on Monday night. So I don't think it is as easy as you sell Jota, which is why I think the midfielder option as a differential punt is the way that most managers will look to go. Because for me, there's no route to both of them. I'm not selling Kane, I'm not selling Haaland. So Watkins is going for one of them, it's going to be Wilson. That means my triple up from Newcastle has to come from Trippier, Wilson and a midfielder. So I think if you've got somebody like, I don't know, maybe you've got a Tony in your third, maybe you've got Watkins and Tony and you've got Haaland, then you can easily get to Wilson and Isak. But in your situation, Kelly, I think you have to think really carefully. You're going to have to listen to Klopp and see what Klopp's got to say about Jota. If Jota's not going to play,
he never gives me any clues. Every week he says he's hurt his back.
I know. But if we get word that Jota's definitely out, then I think you move to Wilson
as someone
as well.
With a back injury, I can't believe he's played as many minutes as he has recently. I mean, I'm grateful for it, but oh.
That cost me a -4 last week. I basically thought Jota wasn't playing and got Isak in, and now Sam's absolutely terrified me that I've gone for the wrong Newcastle striker. What I would say, Kenny, so two things on this. I think Isak and Wilson is exciting, and it is differential, and I don't think, you know, I don't know what percentage of managers will go that way. I also think it's short term, because I think 37 and 38, do you want Isak and Wilson? Okay, you could bench one, or you're starting to guess who's going to start.
I'd sell Isak probably virtually straight after the double, I think.
Okay.
But then
okay.
I don't like booking in a transfer, though. Doesn't sit well with me.
No. Now, and those transfers are so precious, aren't they, in the last couple of game weeks of the season. And my other question is, if you just look at this double coming up for Newcastle, Leeds away, Brighton home, which game do you think Newcastle have the potential of scoring more goals in? Which game of those two is Isak or Wilson more likely to start? If you were making a choice between the two, I mean, that's a guessing game. That's a complete guessing game. I just think Leeds away is going to be, I don't see lots of goals for Newcastle in that game. So doubling up on Isak and Wilson. Now, Brighton, I know Brighton have just shipped 5. I would actually fancy Newcastle to score more in the Brighton game at home than in the Leeds game. So I probably want, if I'm deciding between the two, who I think is going to start the Brighton game. But then I don't know. Is which one's Wilson going to start?
My theory on that is that he starts Wilson in a very physical game. So Everton away, West Ham away, which I would put Leeds in that category. And he tends to start Isak. I mean, I know injuries maybe have played a part in minute management as well. But he starts Isak when they play teams that are more open and just playing team more, like Spurs, like Villa, Arsenal, they started both. But those kind of teams where you know that Isak might have a bit more space and a bit more time on the ball because it's just more of an open game than Everton away, West Ham away, where you know it's just going to be very, very physical. And for those games, I think it's fair, Callum Wilson is far more of a physical striker than Isak is. So I would if I look at it, I would think that Wilson starts on his own against Leeds and Isak starts against Brighton. Maybe then Wilson starts also against Brighton because it's home, but they haven't really started. I think together they've rarely started from the beginning of the game. So that's why I think it's risky. But even if you have Isak and not Wilson, he will have his fair share of minutes and time to get points for you in the next two games.
I've done an uncharacteristic amount of reading this week because it really did concern my own team. So a few more stats to kind of back up what you've said in terms of Wilson outperforming Isak recently. In his last 4 matches, Wilson has got 5 goals and 32 points. Isak, 2 goals and 1 assist, only getting 23 points. They're nearly the same for shots in the box. Wilson leads Isak 9-8, but Wilson has had more than double the number of big chances. And Wilson has been a lot more accurate, bettering Isak by 7 shots on target to 2. So the stats kind of back up the eye test as well.
If you go for both, Kelly, and I know we'll come onto this later in the pod, you'll then have the question as well of which one do you captain potentially. So that's probably, from those stats, you'd probably go Wilson, wouldn't you? If you have both, you'd probably go Wilson.
Yeah.
I've gone Isak.
This is going to be the worst pod I've ever hosted because there's so many pauses where I'm thinking what I'm going to do. I've essentially done this. I do this sometimes where I just make this pod into surgery for summer signings, which is the name of my team. Okay, I think we've covered off everything from Newcastle there. Anything else that we think managers need to know going into this game week, Sam, about Eddie Howe's side? or be wary of.
The clean sheets and the lack of returns, you know, we've still seen some really good set piece numbers from him, and we've still seen some good chances created. I think he's created 15 chances, which is six more than anyone else in the team. So he is still getting that attacking threat in. I think you hold him. I think that there will be some debate if you've got the double up defensively, so you've got a Botman, as to whether you start them both, because a lot of managers have got Botman and then they've got Robertson or they've got Trent as their other player that they would want to play that week, because you've got to play three Brighton if you've got them and you're trying to play your three Newcastle. And of course, you still want to play Haaland, and if you've got Salah or a forward from somewhere else, you want to play them. And that does leave you in a bit of a quandary. So it's going to take some careful thought for FPL managers this week if you have got the defensive double up, because for players like Botman, who don't necessarily have a huge amount of attacking returns, it's just clean sheet potential. And we've already said that we think Leeds is going to be a challenge, and we obviously hope Brighton will score because we're also heavily invested in Brighton. But playing both of them, you might need to think really carefully, and we'll talk later about single game weekers, but those single game weekers with nice fixtures, you do have to question whether it's the right thing to do. I think with the attackers, you play them if they're double game weekers, but the defenders, slightly more questionable.
Okay, the other team doubling this week are Brighton. Not ideal preparation, as I said before, losing 5-1 at home to Everton earlier this week. But of course, they have two doubles in two game weeks. Now, so many of us, Jules, are already so heavily invested in Brighton. We'll start with the defence again. Poor old Jason Steele. Are you worried about his place at all?
No, I don't think so.
You
I think
should he would be, keep, Jules. You should be playing. Quaking would, in your boots.
He would keep playing. It's just one of those games where everything went against them anyway. Not just Steele, but everything, everyone. I mean, conceding a goal after 32 or 34 seconds already just sets the tone, I think. So I think the Zerbi has a lot of faith in Jason Steele anyway. And I think he's very important in the way they play, full stop, when they have the ball. And I think if you drop him, you drop the whole starting 11, because I don't think Steele was worse than anybody else, really. So I think he will still play, like Estupinan will, like, I mean, Webster and Dunk. Again, I don't think that Colwill will come in because they conceded five goals in the last game. Interesting to see where Caicedo plays, because I think they've missed him in midfield for sure, and when he deputies a right back. It was just a shocker defensively that happens sometimes once a season for a team like that.
Is Estupinan still the best option in defence at Brighton though, Ali? Because I've watched him a lot live recently and I don't know how he hasn't had more attacking returns, because he does get forward.
Yeah, just on the goalkeeper thing very quickly, if we're going Isak and Wilson, Jules could go just get Sanchez and go Sanchez and Steele, Jules, and then you're covered basically. So I'm an Estupinan owner, Kelly, and just in reference to Sam's point, I am in a massive quandary this week about whether Trent Alexander-Arnold is going to sit on my bench or whether he is a single game weaker away to Leicester. So I've already referenced the Leicester-Fulham game I saw at Craven Cottage. Leicester were wide open. I mean, I'm just picturing Trent Alexander-Arnold in that midfield role, flicking balls over to Salah, Gakpo, Nunez making the runs. Honestly, there could be a load of attacking returns in that game. But equally, Estupinan has two games, and actually the reason I signed him, Kelly, as you're saying, is for attacking returns. So he's got double the chance that Alexander-Arnold has, you know, principally because he's got the two games. I guess there's always the danger. There is a rest coming for him, or possible rotation, I don't know, although he does seem a very regular starter in that Brighton lineup. I've got to say, at the moment, it seems crazy. I'm thinking I might put Estupinan on my bench.
Whoa.
Yeah, and play Trent Alexander-Arnold along with Trippier and Cher would be my back three. And then I'd have a midfield five with two Brighton mids in there and a front two of Haaland and Isak. That's what I'm thinking.
Sam's nodding along in agreement there. She likes that.
The problem that a lot of FPL managers are going to have this week is that you've got three Brighton, you've got three Newcastle, and then you go, great, okay, I'm going to go and set up my team for this week. And then you go, how do I get my important other defender in my team? And for a lot of managers now, that's Trent or it's Robertson or it's a Liverpool defender. And when you look at the underlying stats for both the Newcastle defence and the Brighton defence, they don't make for hugely good reading. You know, we've spent a lot of time talking about how Trippier's not done anything in seven game weeks. If you take a look at Brighton, they've kept just two clean sheets away from home all season. only Wolves and Leeds have kept less clean sheets than them. They've got one each. So are we really expecting them to go to, you know, they're two really difficult games, right? They've got two really, really difficult games in this doubles. They're not easy doubles. Are we really expecting them to go away from home and keep clean sheets? I don't think we are. So we are relying on Estupiñán getting that attacking return. Now, we saw in game week 34 that he's got that in his locker, but we haven't seen that consistently from him. But you do see that consistently from Trent, because, of course, he's really not playing as a defender anymore. He's playing in midfield and going on these lovely runs. So I can see why Ali's saying that we would bench Estupiñán. I think my temptation might be to bench Shah rather than Estupiñán, just because I think Estupiñán has more attacking potential than Shah does across those two matches. And I think if you've got Trippier, you kind of cover the both defences that way. So I think that's the way I'd lean. But it does mean benching a double game week player in order to do it. And with the way that Brighton have been defending defensively, then I can see why, particularly away from home. Jules is laughing.
Just because you said have been defending defensively. I mean, you could defend
offensively,
but yeah, it's like...
Defence is the best form of attack. Jules, remember that? Or attack is the best form of defence, rather.
Okay, then on to midfield, where our biggest headache is. So many of us were set with our one or two Brighton midfielders. So many of us, not you, Sam, had Solly March. Oh, another part of the podcast where I'm just going to pause and sigh. Doesn't look good for him, does it, Jules?
No, he doesn't.
I'm not laughing at the injury, by the way. I'm laughing at the misfortune of it.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I felt for all the March owners when he didn't start, now that there's the injury as well. The thing is, they've got four games coming up. It's inevitable that De Zerbi is going to rotate. Mitoma cannot play four games in a row. I don't think it's possible. I really don't. As much as I would love them to, and the tough game, they've got City, Arsenal and Newcastle in those four, by the way. And Southampton is the fourth one before they play Villa for the last game of the season. I just don't think that physically after the season that they've had, even if they haven't played in Europe, but Mitoma went to the World Cup, for example, McAllister went to the World Cup. Can they really play 70, 75 minutes in all those four games back to back? Nah, in what is, and the FA Cup run too, that took a lot of energy. I just don't think so. So whoever you have, just get ready, prepare yourself by the fact that De Zerbi at some point will have to make changes. He will have to rotate. So just get ready to take that hit, because one, we don't know who's going to not play and when and et cetera, et cetera. But I really think it's inevitable that he rotates, because four games now back to back like that is a crazy schedule, really.
We saw it against Wolves, didn't we? I mean, I did that game, and seeing the team news come out, five changes, two of those bench were World Cup winner McAllister and Mitoma, and they still went on and won 6-0. So there are other fringe players, so to speak, coming into a bit of form and certainly able to play minutes as well. Ali, what are you going to be doing about Solly March, and what should other managers be doing?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit boring, Kelly. It's steady Eddie, because the obvious move is, so I've got Mitoma. You know, Jules has just mentioned the games they've got. I know the rotation is coming, but McAllister's been returning. You know, he's on the penalties, he's on the set pieces. He's the one I don't own. And it's an easy switch. I've got 2 million in the bank. Solly March to Alexis McAllister is probably going to be my move. I'm not particularly tempted by anything else sort of funky or rogue. You know, you could go Wananote, for example, in that Brighton midfield, who may benefit from Solly March's absence. But I just think that's... I'm not chasing like that. It's, you know, that is a really sort of differential pick. I mean, the other thing I could possibly do, Kelly, is play both Estupiñán and Cher and Trent Alexander-Arnold. Just leave Solly March on my bench. You could do that, and then save myself 2 free transfers for game week 37, because I've actually got some Manchester City manoeuvres in mind in game week 37 that if I make a transfer this week are going to cost me a hit in that game week, and I'm not that mad keen on taking hits. But I just think the amount of games that Brighton have got, and I know then, you know, I know those players are not going to play every single minute, but goodness me, even though they lost 5-1, they create chances and they score goals, and that's the part of the Brighton team that I want. So I think I will go March to McAllister.
Sam, you must be feeling quite smug at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult though, because when I bought Alexis McAllister, he was playing in that kind of number 10 role, and I was like, yeah, this is great. He's going to get loads of attacking returns, and he was. But the last couple of games, he's been moved back into that central midfield role. And I've looked at the team sheet before it and gone, oh, not again. Like, I don't want you playing there, Alexis. I want you up there. But yet, I mean, they have been a bit fortunate, the two goals that he's got. Obviously, a penalty in the last minute against Manchester United and a ricochet off his back that he didn't know was happening at the end of the last game. But you take those points in FPL and you squirrel away that jam and go, thank you very much. That's a nice green arrow. I think what we've learned from Alexis McAllister is that, you know, his underlying numbers are ridiculously good. He wins the stats across that Brighton team consistently when you look at him against the likes of Mitoma, against March, against Gross. There isn't really anybody else that kind of challenges him in pretty much all areas of the stats that we would like to look at, attempts on goal, you know, chances created, that kind of stuff. So I think when you take into account everything, Alexis McAllister is the one to own. He has already had a rest and he is really important to that Brighton team. So I suspect we might see him rested less over the next few weeks, especially if March is injured and doesn't play. I think in answer to Ali's point about keeping March on the bench, my issue with that somewhat is that if he doesn't play for the next 5 weeks, that is a valuable midfield slot that's been kind of wasted. And as we aren't seeing a lot of clean sheets from Newcastle and Brighton at the moment, how valuable are their defenders? They're just valuable for attacking returns is the reality. So for me, the optimum at Brighton is you have Alexis McAllister. I still think you have Mitoma. I still think he is a good option. Yes, we've only had one assist since game week 32. So we've not exactly had prolific returns. But I think if McAllister and Mitoma were on the pitch for the full game against Wolves, they'd had hatfuls in that one as well. So I think they're the two to have, particularly with March out injured. And then I think you can choose how you go. If you're locked in with Steele, make sure you've got a backup keeper just in case he decides to give Sanchez the nod in one of those matches, which wouldn't surprise me if Sanchez got the nod in one of them. He's a really good goalkeeper as well, as we've seen from seasons gone by. Or Estupiñán, if you've got him, I think you keep. I think if you're doubled up, there are some managers that are doubled up on the Brighton defence. You know, they've got the likes of Estupiñán and Dunk, and then they've got one midfielder. I don't really like that from Brighton at the moment. You're not getting those attacking returns out of those defenders consistently. So I think I would be looking to kind of move and make big changes to the way that I would be invested in Brighton there. McAllister, Mitoma, Estupiñán, they'd be my three.
Come on, Jules, you like a punt. Going to be punting on any Brighton forwards? We've spoken so heavily about goalkeeper, defence, midfield, but is it just too risky?
Come on, Jules.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm thinking about Enciso. I love Enciso. I mean, I liked him when he was so highly rated when he was really young, younger before coming to Europe. And there's a moment in the Everton game, I think it was, where he took the ball on the edge of the box and did like in such a tight space. There were three players around him and he did like step overs, kind of nutmegs. He went right and went left. And I just think he's got so much ability technically, so much potential that he scored an amazing goal as well quite recently. And I think he will be an amazing differential because I think he will get quite a lot of minute, whether he's off the bench or as a starter in the next 2 weeks in those four games that they have. And I think De Zerbi really likes him. And he's such a De Zerbi player because of the way he plays, and he's a sponge probably for what De Zerbi gives him as instruction. So I think Enciso is a huge gamble, of course, and it's a big differential, but it would not be completely, completely crazy. So I've written it down on the notepad, you know?
Not the dreaded notepad.
The one that you could not read in Qatar, but his name is there.
That's nothing to do with my reading ability, more to do with your handwriting. I think that rounds off our Newcastle and Brighton chat. Let's quickly just mention a couple of the single game week players. Ali, you're obviously very concerned about Trent Alexander-Arnold and the Liverpool players in that fixture against Leicester. There are a few players that have nice fixtures this week that we just can't overlook.
No, totally. I mean, Liverpool is one. So the likes of, I mean, I'm sure a load of us own Salah, but, you know, Gakpo, Nunez, any Liverpool attacking asset. Well, in fact, any Liverpool player, because like I'm talking about Trent Alexander-Arnold, I want him to start this week for me. Manchester United at home to Wolves. Luke Shaw's going to be sitting on my bench. There's nothing I can do about that. Loads of us own Marcus Rashford. If you fancy a doubt, Bruno Fernandes, I mean, if I know differentially strictly under 5%. Bruno Fernandes is just over 7% owned. So there's one for you, possibly. Wow. You know, I mean, if you were thinking of a a single game week player differential this week, Bruno Fernandes. Manchester City, Kelly, I mean, obviously, you know, you've got to spin the wheel and play the Pep roulette, but I'm hoping Mahrez is in my team. I'm hoping he's going to start again because he didn't obviously play midweek in the Champions League. Then I think I'm going to have to do something about him in game week 37 because I think it's going to be all change again. And the other one I've scribbled down, call me crazy, is I'm doing West Ham tonight, commentary on West Ham tonight. So we're recording this on Thursday in the Europa Conference League. That is a massive game for West Ham, and I think they're pretty much safe now in the Premier League. They're away at Brentford at the weekend, so I just wonder that turnaround for West Ham from a very emotional, sort of energetic Thursday night to Sunday, Brentford assets, possibly, if you fancy a single game week player punt. I mean, Tony's the obvious one, but he's very highly owned. So what about a bit of Brian and Bermo? Just go crazy. That's a kind of jewels pick there. Curtis Jones and Brian and Bermo. Get him in.
It does go back to what Rob Green was saying on the pod the other week, though, doesn't it? About the fact that at this stage of the season, you have to take advantage of teams that either have something to play for or teams that maybe have things to play for in other competitions like West Ham. So maybe they won't be as focused on the Premier League. I don't know.
While we're talking about really rogue differentials and teams that have got something left to play for, just a little moment to shout out to Shea Adams at Southampton. They have got to win, Kelly. They have got to win this weekend.
Hold on a second.
No.
They're gone. They are gone.
Is anyone's headphones broken here?
They are gone.
Southampton are 8 points behind Everton, who are currently in 17th. If they don't win this weekend, they are officially, they're going to go, aren't they? So if you have a think about teams that you would really, really want to invest in because they've got something to fight for, Southampton aren't really one that jump out at you. However, they do have something to fight for. And if you're looking for a bit of a pump because you want to free up some money because you don't have, you know, a Salah in your team and you want him or whatever, he's blanked only once in his last three home starts for Southampton. He got results for them against both Leicester and in the draw against Spurs. He has had 8 shots and 7 of those have come from inside the box in the last 4 matches. That's more than any other Southampton player. At the same time, they play Fulham, who have a very poor defensive record at the moment. Now, yes, Mitrovic is going to be back for Fulham, so you're not going to invest in the Southampton defence. But I do think that if you are absolutely chasing in a mini league, if you are desperate for a differential, there could just be something in having a bit of a pun on Shea Adams. Or maybe I've gone mad.
But you know, I'm really worried about the City rotation. I won't lie, even for Haaland.
Yeah, I am
because
too.
I was in Madrid on Tuesday and it was an incredible game. Maybe if you watch on television, it was a bit cagey.
Oh, look, there he goes. He's going to mention
that
he's there.
Listen, it's a really good point. I have already, but you were not listening. And I just think that I think emotionally, it would have taken a lot of those players. And all, I guarantee you, I know they're in a title race here and everything, but all they are thinking about right now, the likes of Haaland and De Bruyne and Grealish and all those players who started in Madrid, is the second leg on Wednesday against Real Madrid at the Etihad. They won't be thinking about Everton. I know Pep is going to say, no, we focus, it's game after game. It's not true. All they're thinking about Istanbul, the final, and that they're 90 minutes away or 120 minutes away from it from next week. If there was two weeks gap between the two legs of the Champions League semi-final, it might be different. But with the second leg, as early as next week, they will all be thinking about it. And I really think that Pep is going to heavily rotate this weekend for the Everton game.
And the thing
on
is, Jules, he can, right?
Yeah, of course he can
because
right.
His squad's so good. So I agree with you. At the minute, in my bus team for game week 36, I got Grealish on the bench because I don't think he's going to start him against Everton.
But even
so,
Haaland, you know.
Haaland's a doubt, yeah. And I think captaining him this week is not a wise idea because I don't think he's necessarily going to get the nod. I was surprised he got the nod last week.
Okay, so with all this potential City rotation, which does look highly likely, it does mean that our captaincy, as you've just said then, isn't a set to be Haaland because he might not start. Ali, you alluded to it before that you don't think it's a wise move to captain him this week. Who will you be giving your armband to instead?
I'm down to 2, Kelly. So it's the classic, you know, the golden rule is don't go against the double game weekers, and I think I'm going to go against the double game weekers. So it's either Alexander Isak for me, who does have the 2 games, but obviously we've discussed, you know, how many minutes he's going to get and where he's going to play in that Newcastle team when he's on the pitch. I'm so I can't get that Leicester defence out of my head from Monday. And Mo Salah just absolutely, it was cafeteria defending his Jet boycott, would it say? It was help yourself, honestly. And I could see Salah going massive. I'm really tempted. I'm really tempted. And it's so not me, Kelly. This is a Julien Laurent, Chris Sutton move of going against the double game weaker and going for the Salah captaincy. But I've just got a feeling. I've just got a feeling that I might go for a single game weaker this week.
Do it, Ali. Okay. Do it.
I'm not going Newcastle defence because, you know, for the reasons we previously discussed. Brighton midfielder I could go, but Jules is exactly right about the rotation. You go Mitoma, you don't know how many minutes you're going to get. So it's Salah or Isak. I'll probably bottle it and go Isak, but I just today, as I'm speaking to you now, I'm thinking, Mighty Mo, come on, stick that armband on and do the business for me.
I'm very tempted by Mo Salah as well. Yeah. Jules, what about you?
Che Adams every day after I've taken a -4 to bring him in. I like Harry Kane because I think he's, as we've been saying every week, pretty much he's on a roll and he's doing a great job. They're away at Villa, which I think is going to be a very open game, and he will have chances to score. So Kane is probably right now my most likely option because, again, I'm really scared that Haaland is benched for the game on Sunday. So I would go Kane, and then depending on who I bring from the Newcastle point, it could be a Newcastle player. But yeah, Kane probably likely.
Are we going to have another different captain from you, Sam?
No, I'm with Jules. I'm either going
of
with
course.
Wilson.
What a stupid thing. Of course, she's going Captain Kane.
No, yeah, I'm going to check Captain Shadams. No, Kane. So Kane has never blanked away at Aston Villa. Averages 9.5 points per match up there. In his last four, he's got 10, 7, 13 and 8. So underlying stats are there. Form is there. Something to fight for is there. Ryan Mason and the kind of, I don't know, there's just a better atmosphere at Spurs at the moment. So that's all in place. So it's that versus the double game weaker. And I am really struggling with that because everything about my FPL managerial style and everything about the rules, the unwritten rules of FPL is there's a double, you captain one of them. But then there's Harry Kane twinkling his eyes at me from over there and I really want to give him the armband.
If you had, you don't own Mo Salah, do you, Sam? If you had the choice between Salah or Kane, who would you go with?
That's harder, I think. I don't have Salah, no. I think they both will return. I think the thing about the games that they have is that it will be open, both of them, as you know, we've said about both those matches. But Salah has more potential for a haul. We've seen that this season than Kane does. Kane tends to get one and maybe an assist. We've had very few hauls from him this season. I can only think of the Crystal Palace game that he's really hauled in. So if I had them both, I think I'd lean towards Salah. But it is an away fixture for Liverpool and they aren't as good away from home because they've had so many home matches in recent weeks. I think we could be a little bit blind to the Liverpool form and the way that that is versus how bad they were away from home prior to that.
So Sam...
Oh my God, that is amazing.
Okay, so
for the purpose of a podcast, Ali, explain what you have just shown to the camera.
So I've just run away to run into my son's bedroom. My son, Sam, Rory, is football mad. He's FPL mad, actually. He's having a very good season. We call him Stat Boy on our pod because he's Statman's protege. And he's a Tottenham fan. Now, that's not my doing. I'm an Ipswich fan.
Legend.
He's chosen Tottenham. But it was his birthday on Tuesday and his godfather got in touch and said, can I get him a Tottenham snugsy? And I had no idea what a snugsy was. I thought it was something he'd wear. But what I'm holding is this sort of, how tall, sort of 12-inch, 18-inch tall sort of doll, squishy's gorgeously cuddly doll of Son with a huge smiley Son face in his top.
I love this so much.
So Rory's favourite player is Son because he plays with a smile on his face. And I knew you'd love that.
I love so, that. I need one of them in my life.
Snudzy. Yeah. We'll get you one.
We'll just finish it off, guys, by confirming your transfers very quickly. Jules, you go first.
Yeah, so one of Joel Linton, Willock, Isak, Wilson, one of them. Sorry, not to be a biggest
help. It's not like you not to tell us.
No, exactly. I just don't know yet. It's too early still. And then outside of the box pick, like an Enciso, a Che Adams, someone like that, I think. Could be my second transfer.
Ali, what about you?
McAllister in for March. Yawn, yawn, yawn. Still toy, you know, I'm going to wrestle with the Salah Isak captaincy all the way until the deadline. But Sam's really given me food for thought. I hadn't even contemplated sticking Cher on the bench and playing Estupiñán in terms of the potential attack in the turn. So if I do win our head-to-head by going that way, Kelly, you'll know who to blame.
Oh, gosh. Next week's book could be hard for me, couldn't
it? This was not what was meant to happen. We don't invite him onto the podcast and then help him. Sam, what about you?
I'm definitely doing Watkins to Wilson. I have another free transfer, which was going to be Gakpo to Joe Linton or Willock. And then I watched Leicester and thought, can't really sell Gakpo anymore, can I? But then the rest of my midfield is Rashford, McAllister, Matoma and Grealish. So the only one there I possibly could part with is Grealish. And I'd have to be quite brave given that City have got a double coming up next week. So not really sure what I'm going to do with that second transfer yet. I might just go in with two Newcastle players and roll it for the following week.
Okay, well, guys, thank you so much for being with us. Ali, your podcast is out now on BBC Sounds, is that correct?
It is, yeah, available on BBC Sounds app and actually anywhere you can get your podcasts. A bit like this one, preview of Game Week 36, Chris, Dave and I competing in our mini league. Yeah, there's the odd bit of good FPL advice in there, here and there, basically. So,
and we will now keep listeners up to date with as and when Jules gets relegated. Don't worry.
What?
I'll make sure people find out about it. Jules, on that note, goodbye. Sam as well. Thank you so much, guys. I'll see you guys, of course, again next Thursday. Off the Bench will also be back next week. Don't forget your deadline is Saturday, the 13th of May at 11 a.m. So get those transfers done by then. There's also some really good articles on the FPL website this week. Not that there isn't always, but I've been paying particular attention to them. Disclaimer, that's where I got most of my stats from this week. So do check them out if you need more hints and tips. And we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.